Hey, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to this week's message. My name's Aaron, and I'm on the staff team here at Eastlake. Everything we do around here depends on the generous donations of our local and online community, people just like you, who tune into these messages and see great benefit from living that idea that life is a gift and love is the point. So if you love what Eastlake is up to, we'd encourage you to contribute by going to eastlakecc.com. With that, let's jump into this week's message.
And today you get to hear from Britt Barron, who is our new friend. She's awesome. I was so upset when she was done last service. So I'm so excited to get to hear from her. She is from Los Angeles. She is a co-pastor there and a spiritual director. So would you help me welcome Britt Barron?
How's it going, everyone? Good. So I just felt like such a sham because I turned to people and was like, we made it, but I'm from LA. But just to get unwarranted pity from you all, we had a really tough winter in LA. We had 1 week where it rained 4 days straight, and I didn't think I was going to make it. But here I am, so thank you. I'm so happy to be with you all. Maybe like a lot of you, have been on quite a journey as it relates to my faith and what that means and how that plays out in the world, and excited to talk about that. Maybe this is true for some of you in this room, maybe not, but I grew up in the evangelical church world. Anyone else? Yeah, woo! In the 90s, right? So like at its peak, right? So I was living the dream. And through a lot of circumstances, right, like being a woman, being a person of color, being gay, coming out, reading books, right, through a lot of different ways, I've had to deconstruct a lot of what that means. Late laughter, but I got it. Deconstruct a lot of that and reconstruct a lot of that, right? And come to a lot of bigger conclusions that the story, perhaps, that I was given was far too small and was meant to be a lot bigger, right? Some conclusions that if creation is sort of the first scripture, the first incarnation, if the universe is telling these stories, if wisdom is wisdom is wisdom, then Michelle Obama and Brene Brown and Jesus and Rumi and our civil rights leaders and all of these people are kind of pushing on the same track about what it means to be human and how that's the hardest job we're going to have in our lives, but there's something to it and we need to pay attention, right? And so I'm so excited to take some of that reconstruction and some of the ways the story has gotten bigger and have this conversation with you all this morning. I want to start with a vulnerable story because I know this is a space where everyone is welcome, right? Like, they said it a lot of times just in the past 20 minutes. In case you're wondering, it's a place where everyone is welcome. So I was 27 years old before I learned how to do my own laundry. I know. That's like the one thing where no matter how progressive, like a community of people, they're like, shame, shame, shame. Through a series of circumstances, one, just being incredibly spoiled, right, by my Mexican mother, who just is like the best. I didn't do laundry, and then I went to college, and I went to college close to my grandparents. So didn't learn it there. And then, I know, I'm just the worst kind of person. I'm letting you know that before we start. And then grad school, moved back in with my parents. And then my first job, right, out of grad school, my first real job was a live-in role on a college campus. And they messed up my apartment. It was supposed to have a washer and dryer, but it flooded. So to like compensate, I got a laundry service, okay? So now I'm like a fully grown adult with just no idea how this works. And I finally move into my like own place. I have my own washer and dryer. And I just, like through context clues, I figure out how it works. So I wash everything in hot and I dry everything. So you can imagine a lot of my clothes would shrink. Like everything would shrink. Like a wool sweater that I then put on my dog is like the kind of life I was living. And just, I don't know, the story I made up in my head was like just some clothes shrink and some clothes don't, and it's just like a 50-50 when you grab one off the rack. Like there's no way to know if clothes are gonna shrink or not. So one day I was with my friend, one of my best friends. I was like, girl, you always pick the right kind of clothes that don't shrink, you know? She's like, what are you saying? And I was like, none of your clothes ever shrink. Like, how do you pick such good clothes? And so then we had a great conversation that then led me to realizing it's not actually about that. There's a way to do laundry that makes a lot more sense. So essentially, I feel like the stories that I was told about Jesus were a lot like that. They didn't actually work. They didn't make sense. I was told this story that kind of, if I could sum it up, Jesus was more of this rubric by which we were all supposed to measure our lives. And on a scale from like 1 to Jesus, if you were like over the 50th percentile, you weren't going to go to hell, which was appealing as a young person. But that didn't actually work and make sense in 2019 in a place like Kirkland, Washington, right? So I've had to do a lot of reframing, and I'm grateful that I have, because I think the temptation sometimes is to just look outside of certain places or only look certain places for wisdom. I think the person of Jesus has a lot to tell us about wisdom. I think there are a lot of voices in the world that have a lot to tell us about wisdom. And one thing I've realized is that this God, this universe is too big. One creed can't hold it. One denomination can't hold it. One church can't hold it. One person can't hold it. One story can't hold it. But we need a lot of voices and a lot of things around the table to make the story get bigger, right? So I'm gonna talk with you all today about one of my least favorite things that Jesus ever said that has turned into one of my most favorite things that Jesus ever said. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Brené Brown, some civil rights leaders, and hopefully it all comes together. We can leave here a little bit encouraged about what it means to be on our human journey together. Before we get started, I'm going to ask for a little physical participation. They've said in here a ton. You can participate as much or as little as you want. Do this if you want. If you don't, I'll be able to see, but it's okay. So we're gonna do something. I want you all to take one of your hands, either one, it doesn't matter, and point to the ceiling. As if there is a clock on the ceiling and your finger is pointed at the 12. And I want you to rotate your finger clockwise. Get it going, like a real big clockwise, right? Everybody going clockwise? 12, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yep, okay, now just keep doing that, but just slowly bring your finger down, keep going, to below your chin, look down, and I want you to tell me which way it's going. You didn't know this was a magic show. So, what changed, right? It's only our perspective. It's the way we're looking at it. You look up, it's moving clockwise. You look down, you're moving clockwise. This is one of the things I love about Jesus. He doesn't tell us what to think. He's trying to tell us how to think, and that makes a huge difference. We live in a world that is saying, look up. Power structures and systems and powerful people and good people, and this is what that means. And Jesus is saying, no, look down. People, women at the well, Samaritans, kids, everyone has a place in this sort of new thing I'm trying to do, this way of life, this idea, this way of living, this thing that's around us and in our midst is there if you just look down, which is a beautiful thing. Because Jesus and most of Scripture and most of our great leaders have been really concerned with one thing, and that is power. And I love that they have been concerned with power, because the world that we live in has taught us only to look up, and when we look up, we only see powerful people. And that's not just true however many years ago, right? That's true right now in 2019. We have some really messed up power systems that have gotten to our minds and forced us to look at things a certain way. So one of my least favorite things that Jesus ever said, and I'll tell you what is my least favorite thing. There's a story in Luke 14. There's a handful of stories before it, but that was never part of the context as I got it. And then there's this part in Luke 14 where Jesus is saying, whoever wants to follow me, right, must hate your mother and father and leave your family and carry your cross and follow me, right? Has anyone ever heard this? And growing up in the church, right, and not even in the church, like your cross to bear became kind of like common vernacular. When something was bad or hard in your life or you had something and it's like, it's just my cross to bear, right? And it meant usually one thing, and that thing was self-denial. So in teenage years, right, carrying a cross almost exclusively means just not having sex before marriage, right? And then it gets a little more complicated as you grow old, like don't drink or smoke weed, which I don't know if smoking weed is a sin anymore, if it's legal, because I don't know how sin works with law, so I don't know. But these are sort of things I was told, like carrying a cross is all about self-denial. And then as I start to think about the way of Jesus, things that Jesus was saying, looking down and seeing something that was in our midst the whole time, I look at the context of this passage and something is very clear. This whole part and all most of Jesus' writings, right, was about is there an in-group or an out-group? There were four parables before Jesus spoke these words. And those four parables, all of them was about who's at your banquet table. If you had a party, who would you invite? Who's at your table? Who's not at your table? Is there an in-group? Is there an out-group? The answer was always no. So then you get to this point where Jesus is very clearly saying, if you want to be in this way of Jesus, then you need to carry this cross. And that doesn't mean self-denial, that means radical inclusion. That means that understanding and being a part of this way of Jesus doesn't mean that you can't whatever. It means that you have to be thinking about who's not at the table and what are you going to do about that. And that might cost you something. It might cost you relationships. I'm a person, right? When I came out, the people who came around me and loved me and supported me, that was at a cost. It does cost. Radical inclusion costs us a lot. And I love that this is sort of the message. So one of the things that I love in the world, one of the things that I'm very obsessed with is the American Civil Rights Movement, right? That happened in the South. It's comprised of 10 years of history. And I get to lead these trips where I take people to the South and we interview people who are part of the Civil Rights Movement and we visit historic sites and we do this whole thing. And so I'm there and one year we were in the home of a man named Medgar Evers, if you've never heard of him. He was an NAACP president in Jackson, Mississippi, a very powerful leader in the Civil Rights Movement. He coined the phrase, you can kill a man, but you can't kill an idea. Which part of me knew that that was his phrase because he knew what? He wasn't going to make it, right? He believed so much in this radical inclusion that we're on a tour in his home. They have kept it as is. He was, in fact, assassinated in his driveway. But you go into his home, and in his children's rooms, all the mattresses and the beds are on the floor. Which was common practice for a lot of civil rights leaders. Why? Because people would throw bricks and shoot into their windows. So if their kids were low, they were safer. So of course I have this moment where I'm like, I'm trash because there's nothing that could get me to put my kids' beds on the floor, right? What do I even care about that much? And then I'm in his room, him and his wife's room with a friend. We're having this conversation. And then I was just immediately brought to tears because I realized he was thinking of me. He was thinking that someday someone who had brown skin might be able to go to college, go to grad school, have a job, live a life, do these things. We have certainly not arrived at any kind of racial equality, but we certainly had people like Mander Evers who had people like me in mind that caused him to what? Pay and sacrifice and do these things for radical inclusion. Science fiction writer Octavia Butler says it this way. She says, I want to live a life that is comprised of planting seeds for trees I'll never sit under. How beautiful is that? I get overwhelmed sometimes thinking about the Medgar Evers and the Stokely Carmichaels and the H.P. Newtons and the Harvey Milks and the Dolores Huertas and the Claudette Colvins and the Cesar Chavez and all the people that made my reality standing here possible. It makes me think about what reality am I making possible, what tree am I planting that I will never sit under? Who someday might be happy that I listened to some wisdom that said, it's not about how good you can be measured by whatever standards people are telling you to look up. It's about looking around and saying, who's not here and how can I make room for them? That's super different. That makes a lot more sense to me.
Hey everyone. Excuse the interruption for a quick minute. My name is Kristen. I'm one of the team members here at Eastlake, and we're so glad that you're joining us today on the podcast. It's been so encouraging for us to hear stories from people all over the country and the world who are listening to these messages and resonating with this idea that we just keep saying over and over again, which is life is a gift and love is the point, and that we are all committed to being a beneficial presence in our own communities. So thanks for joining us. I hope that that's resonating with you. It's just really fun for us. So wanted to also say thank you to those of you who contribute. This place, all of these things that we do are happening because of people who make consistent, even just small consistent gifts. It helps us plan. It helps us know that there are really people behind us who want this thing to continue. So thank you to those of you who do that. If you haven't had a chance to give yet, I would encourage you to maybe think about doing that if you find this beneficial in your own life. To make a contribution, it's really easy. You can go to eastlakecc.com and there's a donate button there with all the info. So thanks so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the message.
And then, of course, you have Martin Luther King Jr., right? One of the greatest leaders this country has seen, arguably one of our great world leaders. Martin Luther King Jr., you may know this, was killed in Memphis, Tennessee. So this Nobel Peace Prize winning leader, this direct line to this to the president, this achiever of all achievements, was killed in Memphis, Tennessee. And you know why he was in Memphis, Tennessee? Martin Luther King Jr. was in Memphis, Tennessee that weekend because he was organizing a march for the Memphis sanitation workers. Because one of the greatest leaders of our time, Nobel Peace Prize winning, direct line to the president, said, "If Memphis sanitation workers don't have a seat at my table, I don't want to be there." This is what reshaping the way we think looks like. All of the things that we look at, all of the wisdom that we gather, so many of the words from Jesus are saying, hey, rethink the way you see power, rethink the way you see powerful people, and rethink the way success looks like. Because even when you've reached the top of what everyone would tell you, the places you need to be and the things you need to achieve, if you look around and someone's not at that table with them, you go back. You go back and you live your life in a way that's going to plant seeds for trees that you will never sit under. When we think about walking out this faith journey, this spiritual life, honestly, whatever it looks like to you, whatever you want to call it, I'm less concerned with that and more concerned with, are we going to have people who are going to take on this responsibility? I think for a lot of my journey, if I'm being honest, once I started deconstructing my faith, once I started like finding some other things, like it was really cool, and my whole life just became about that. What new enlightened thing like have I arrived to? What like new cool thing do I believe? Meanwhile, I'm not really doing anything. which there's time for that, and there's season for that, and I don't mock that. But I think sometimes we deconstruct things to such a point and we get so caught up in what's the right words and what are the right verbiage and am I saying the right things, and we forget that we don't live in a vacuum. That there are people coming after us. There are people who went before us who would be so sad if the things that they did we didn't get to live out and embrace. So my caution is always to not get caught up in the words. I have so many conversations with people, they're like, I don't know what to call myself. Like, am I a Christian? Am I this? And I'm this. I'm like, I don't know if it matters. Are you living your life in a way that is connected to the people around you? Are you able to look down and see a different reality than what the power structures and systems have told you you should see? Are you enacting this way of justice and generosity? Call it whatever you want to call it. We just need it. Right? And the debates and the rhetoric sometimes are hard for me when I'm just like, yeah, if you hear from Jesus, if you hear from Brené Brown, let's just hear it and do something. Right? Let's let those words become action, let that action become rhythm, and let's create something beautiful. There's this proverb that has been so stuck in my head lately that says, we didn't inherit this land from our ancestors, we're borrowing it from our children. And I'm always like, damn, we are. We're part of something so much bigger. And if we get caught up in the rhetoric of people who say, you can't call yourself a Christian if you believe this. You have to call yourself a Christian to believe this. You can't call yourself a blank if you do this. That's looking up. Looking down looks like, hey, I'm just here to be a part of the healing, wholeness, and transformation of this world. Like Brené Brown says, my healing is inextricably tied to your healing, and our healing is inextricably tied to the healing of the world. So you want to be a part of the healing of the world? You want to be a part of this repair? You want to be a part of creating seats at tables that have been exclusive and have been oppressive and been harmful? Then we're going to have to do some healing. We're going to have to get out of the rhetoric. We're going to have to get out of our own heads. We're going to have to be willing to make actual sacrifices for people who are coming after us. We're going to have to pause and remember the people that came before us. We're going to have to be a little bit grateful that we're even standing here. And I think about this all the time for the future generations. I'm like, where will they go, right? Like Ava DuVernay coined the phrase, like, I am my ancestors' wildest dreams. I am! Like, never in my ancestors' wildest dreams did they see this. That should light a fire under our butts to do what? Create a life for the next ones. And maybe get out of some of this rhetoric that makes us feel like we can't participate in the healing because we don't know what to call it, and we don't know whose name or flag to fly under, and we don't know whose creed to say. Who cares? Everyone is qualified to be a part of this healing, and we need everyone to be a part of this healing. You cannot count yourself out because you don't know what to call it. You are still an integral part of it. Your healing is tied to mine. We have to figure this out. Ditch all the words, ditch all the things. If it doesn't make sense, don't do it. If it's pointing towards healing, wholeness, and transformation, let's pick up some stuff. Let's do it, right? Sometimes I think about how weirdly ingrained my like evangelical upbringing is, right? Like I do all this deconstruction and I go through all of these things and then like some like it's like a weed. You know what I mean? It just like creeps up and then all of a sudden you're like, what? Oh my gosh, why did I say that? I don't even believe that, right? And even our societal way of thinking is like, I'm always like, I'm a card carrying feminist, right? I've got the card in my wallet, in case anyone wants to see it. And I've deconstructed gender roles and gender norms, right? And then sometimes I'll find myself thinking something that is like super 1950s, and I don't know where it came from, right? Well, it came from years and years and years and years and years and years and years of being told to look up, and looking up meant a certain thing. And that's super okay. That any point in the journey is okay. If you're not sure about certain things you believe, or something makes you feel uncomfortable, or you're not sure, or you haven't deconstructed, or you feel like all your friends think this, or you think this, like, whatever, right? We need each other to see the divine in one another. I love realizing that the story starts in Genesis 1 and not Genesis 3, and that means that the story is bigger than the Bible. That even the Bible points us to a reality that says this thing is about all of creation, and in all of creation you can find the divine. And if the divine is in all of creation, that means that it's all of you. And if we can somehow reconcile that we are divine, that we have something in us, that our longing for healing and wholeness and transformation comes from the divine, then we start to trust it. And I need more people in the world who trust that the divine is in them, that they carry something so beautiful. And if you can start to believe that about yourself, then you can start to believe it about someone else. If you can start to believe it about someone else, then maybe even you can believe it about your enemy. And that will certainly change the way we approach some of these corrupt systems that have our world in bondage. that the wisdom of some of these people is not pointing us towards us versus them. The wisdom is saying we are connected by something, that the divine in all of us calls us to healing and wholeness and transformation. And listening to that and trusting that will change the way we see each other, which will change the future. Because we didn't inherit this world, we're borrowing it. We want to turn it back into some good pieces. Does that sound good? All right, so would you all stand with me? I think I'm going to ask you to grab the hand of the person next to you. I can't remember the exact. Is this something that you all do? No? Okay, but yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to grab the hand of the person. Great. Can't remember. We do this at my church. So welcome to New Abbey, Pasadena. So great to have you all here. But I just want to speak these words over us this morning. May we go this week and be people who are in the business of seeing the divine in us, seeing divine in everyone that might come after us, and start planting some seeds for trees we may not sit under, but we know desperately need to be there. Go in grace and peace.